We're on the MIT campus in Cambridge, Massachusetts, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. We're standing on a...
I'm John Oxendorf. I grew up in Elkins, West Virginia, in Randolph County. I'm a structural engineer, and I'm a professor of civil engineering and architecture at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology here in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
That's the train that goes through the MIT campus. It goes right by my house. My kids all rush to the window, train, train. You know, it's a feature of MIT that all our buildings are connected. And so as you walk through the campus, you walk through different departments. And that means there's an intermingling of people all day long, every day, which means the mathematicians are working on the biology problems and the computer scientists are talking to artists. And so it's a really vibrant and fun place to work because you never know who you're going to run into. I studied civil engineering and specifically structural engineering, how things stand up and fall down. But I was always interested in culture and history and archaeology.
Good morning, everyone.
This morning, Professor John Oxendorf leads a group of student engineers, architects, and urban planners in an elective class called School Design for Developing Countries. They're designing a new school for youngsters in Cambodia and will help build it later in the year.
I teach the design of structures, but I've always been passionate about history. Growing up in Elkins, there were two abandoned mansions that I used to explore as a kid, and I just loved old buildings. I always loved old buildings. And so I've carved out a niche, a career as an engineer studying old buildings and trying to learn things from them. You know, I very much believe that we have a lot to learn from the past.
Today, at 36, John Oxendorf is the world's leading authority on old buildings. That is, ancient structures of brick or stone that are still standing, and particularly domes and Gothic cathedrals with their vaults and arches that were built over the last 2,000 years. He's also a leading expert on the fiber suspension bridges of the Inca Empire in the Andes Mountains of Peru. Using some of these centuries-old principles, Oxendorf designs modern, fuel-efficient green buildings, among them award-winning structures in Britain and South Africa.
I got approached maybe 5 years ago by an absolutely spectacular architect from South Africa named Peter Rich. And together with a former student of mine, Michael Ramage, who now teaches in England, the three of us designed a series of vaults for a museum in a really remote area of South Africa. And the goal was to use local materials as much as possible and to employ local people. And we came up with a design that for lower cost than an alternative and much lower environmental impact, on the order of 80% lower carbon emissions, we designed and built a series of what we think are quite beautiful masonry vaults. And the building has really been seen as a radical new solution that's won a lot of international awards and last year was named the World Building of the Year.
No one was more surprised than John Oxendorf when, at 26, and only 8 years after he graduated from Elkins High School, he became one of the youngest professors ever at MIT. Perhaps it helped that the president of MIT at the time Oxendorf was hired, Charles Vest, is a West Virginian. But the man who hired Oxendorf, longtime professor Leon Glixman, saw something special in him.
John is really a very unusual person, and we could see that after our first meeting with him. John has some really brilliant new ideas that he's pursuing in this area, and he just has this level of enthusiasm and manner of communication, which impressed us so much. Obviously, we had other stellar candidates. He just stood up head and shoulders above the others.
Now we're at the end of the Infinite Corridor, which is a long central hallway that goes through the middle of MIT, and this is really the backbone of the whole campus. You also see, you know, laboratories on the sides where people are doing, in this case, nanotechnology. And that's part of the idea, is opening it up and taking away the mystery behind, you know, research, so visitors to MIT can come and see it and get excited about the discoveries that are happening here.
Radar, artificial intelligence, and the World Wide Web started in these labs. This university is ranked in the top 5 in the world and its engineering school is ranked number one.
Maggie, I'm glad to see you're working on design of concrete structures. That's important.
In the afternoon, John leads a group of graduate students who have been asked by the cement industry in the United States to come up with a more environmentally friendly concrete.
So we have this industry meeting coming up next Monday. And engineering, really why I love it, it is hard, it's problem solving. It's trying to figure something out. And, you know, some of the best engineers I know are people in West Virginia who don't necessarily have engineering degrees, but they could solve any problem you give them. I grew up making things and building things, and when I got to engineering school and we had to design and implement our ideas and build them at full scale, well, it makes a difference if you've been in a shop before and used power tools before. You know, I was behind in some ways compared to kids from really fancy high schools all over the country and world, but in other ways, there were advantages I got that helped me to excel.
Though John likes to refer to himself as a rabid West Virginian. In fact, he wasn't born in the Mountain State.
I came to West Virginia when I was five, so for kindergarten, my parents were both from Ohio, and they wanted to live a simpler life. They wanted to raise their own food and raise kids, and they settled originally in Hampshire County and then finally in Randolph County and raised a big family, six kids. Six kids in 8 years, when I look back, I think, what were they doing? They said, if we're going to grow all this food, we need a lot of labor to help us out. So they had me and my siblings to help weed the garden and chop the firewood and bake the bread. You know, my parents made some choices. They decided not to have a television. They also decided not to have a telephone. And growing up in the 1980s in West Virginia without a telephone was, not to mention no cell phones, but no landline in our house. We would go to the neighbors if we needed to call someone. But it was just an absolutely phenomenal way to grow up.
But little Johnny O, as he was known then, was far from perfect. According to his father, Gene Oxendorf, Johnny was a prankster, a chatterbox, and a bookworm. In short, he was a handful.
He wasn't quite a troublemaker, but he was always in trouble, you know? He was always into stuff. He would talk to anybody, walk up to somebody on the street and start a conversation. And they were always amazed. He's never met a stranger. And that's the most important thing to me, to be that open about things and about people. That's done him well. It's carried him a long way, more so than his education. At times, I had to make John go outside and play because he just lay around the couch and read all the time.
I remember being 10 years old and reading three books in one day. All summer long, and I remember my dad being seriously worried about me, you know, not getting my nose out of the book. You know, the other thing I really remember is just being outdoors, playing outside. Man, did we play.
Gene, I've brought you to the Elkin City Park, and this is the spot where that took place.
The Oxendorf kids played with the Gillespies, who live nearby. Sid Gillespie, now the director of the Elkins YMCA, remembers Johnny Oxendorf getting into some brawls.
We actually, all of us were, I think, riding our bikes around, and Johnny and another friend of ours ended up getting into a little fight. And I remember us just putting our bikes down, and we thought, okay, here they go. It was very interesting to watch these two guys go at it. It was a 50-50 toss-up, but Johnny did come out victorious on this corner fight lot. But then, you know, we kind of got up. It was over. Everyone gets on their bikes. It's all done, which is great about Elkins.
A major turning point in John's life happened when he was in the fifth grade at Midland Elementary School in Elkins.
I had a lot of special teachers, and in fifth grade, one teacher in particular, Nicole Balt, gave me an assignment in reading class, and she said, I'd like you to write a paper about the Incas. They were a civilization in Peru, based in Peru in the Andes in South America. And I was so fascinated by this lost civilization that in some cases, cities like Machu Picchu had been overgrown by the jungle and then rediscovered in the 20th century. And I remember very clearly having a life goal to visit Machu Picchu in Peru before I died.
After he graduated from Elkins High School, John went to Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, to study archaeology and engineering.
When I got to Cornell, I met a really exceptional professor named Mary Sansaloni. She looked out for me from almost as soon as I arrived there.
I was teaching an introduction to structural engineering for first year, first semester students. And John was in my class. And he came up to me after the first day and asked me a question. I don't remember the question today, but I do remember thinking, I recognize his accent. I asked John, I said, are you from West Virginia? And he looked shocked and he said, how do you know that I'm from West Virginia? And I said, well, your accent sounds very familiar. My dad's from West Virginia, Fairmont. And so we hit it off, and he became my advisee, and he was a wonderful student. I've kept up with John ever since.
That very same year, Mary Sansaloni was named the top professor in the United States. At Cornell, she encouraged John in his wide interest in disciplines outside engineering and helped him devise a plan to visit Peru to study the ancient Inca civilization that fascinated him as a fifth grader. And after visiting Machu Picchu, he thanked Mrs. Balt, his fifth grade teacher in Elkins.
I don't even think she remembered necessarily assigning me that paper. And, you know, that's the amazing thing about being a teacher, is that you make a little splash and you never know how far those ripples go. It was almost insignificant in her whole life from her standpoint, but from my standpoint, it changed everything.
After Cornell, John Oxendorf went on to further studies at Princeton University, Cambridge University in England, as well as universities in Australia, Japan, and Spain. In 2008, John was awarded a MacArthur Fellowship, a so-called genius grant of $500,000 to continue his work. Today, John, along with his wife, Ann Carney, and their two children, serve as housemasters to 120 graduate students at MIT. They also host West Virginia students during WVU football and basketball games. In fact, the most important thing to know about John Oxendorf, according to him, is that he's from West Virginia.
I'm so proud of being a West Virginian. And, you know, whenever I meet anyone, it's almost always one of the very first things I tell them. You know, West Virginia is such a part of who I am and where I came from. And I think it's important for all of us to know who we are. And in my case, it was about a childhood growing up, swimming in rivers and hiking in the woods and just exploring. You know, that's what childhood should be. Not everybody gets that.
John's the only person I know of in the world today that's bringing that understanding and knowledge of ancient structures into modern design. It means so much more when your students come from the kind of background that John came from and humble roots and they succeed. I'm just so proud of him. But I have to say, a student like John comes along once in a lifetime.
And John Oxendorf continues to stay connected to his home state. For many years, he's been a regular speaker at the National Youth Science Camp near Bartow in Pocahontas County.
As part of the science camp, I went and visited my friends Wayne and Kay Gillespie on their farm in Pocahontas County, and we were sitting under an apple tree drinking iced tea, and it was about the closest you could come to paradise on Earth. And I just thought to myself, I need this in my life. I got to get back to West Virginia more. I got to get back to this peaceful place where I grew up. That very day, I said to Wayne, let me know if you hear of any property. And I ended up finding a small cabin in Pocahontas County, a hunting cabin that I go back to every year. I've planted an orchard, and I like to eat ramps and venison and all the things I can't get up in Boston. For me, owning a piece of land in West Virginia and getting back when I can, I stay connected to it. But, you know, I also have a long-term goal. I'd like to one day found a small college or university in West Virginia that would be completely free, that would give priority to local people. People would work with their hands. There would be a balance between your intellect and your mind and physical labor and working with your hands. I want the students to help design and build and operate the campus. You know, it sounds like an incredible pipe dream, but at the same time, I'm still young, I'm still dreaming, and West Virginia's a big part of my dreams. It's a seed, it's not really sprouting yet, but maybe one day.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jean Snedeker.